Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Hey, locksmiths. Friend of the show and our Check the Locks Halloween episode co-host Jessica Gomez has written a dark thriller novel called Pieces of You. This creepy but emotional tale of grief, abduction, and murder is Mayor of Easttown meets Psycho, and it's perfect for all of you who love crime stories.
Nora Aberdeen, a grieving college dropout, ventures to a deteriorating small town to meet a blind date. On her drive home, a bloody young woman darts in front of her car, causing Nora to veer off the road and headfirst into a tree. When Nora regains consciousness, the woman is gone. Nora's estranged uncle, a sheriff's deputy, comes calling with information about a growing list of young women turning up dead in the small town of Woodbridge, including the woman who caused Nora's accident. The local police have written the women off as drug overdoses, but suspicious circumstances and the department's ineptitude point to something more nefarious. Unsure if she can trust the only family she has left, Nora tries to uncover the secrets of the missing young women and her connection to them when a strange motive unfurls. Will Nora uncover the truth before the killer claims another victim?
Pieces of You by Jessica Gomez releases October 1st. Pre-order as a hardcover, paperback, or ebook online at Barnes & Noble, Target, Amazon, bookshop.org, or ask your local bookstore to order it for you. Sign up for Jessica's newsletter at writerjessicagomez.com and follow her on Instagram at writerjessicagomez for updates.
Warning, Check the Locks podcast is a true crime podcast and may contain graphic descriptions of violence, murder, sexual assault, and more. Check the Locks podcast is not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is strongly advised.
Welcome back to Check the Locks podcast. As always, I'm John Connor.
I'm Olivia Cornu.
Saying thank you for joining us this week as we dive into yet another truly terrifying true crime case. This is a special one. Olivia, we don't normally do full episodes on a Thursday, but you know this last one that we're doing was pretty dense. So I'm super excited to get into the part two. But before we do that, as always, how are you doing? How's your week been? What you been up to?
My week's been pretty good. Nothing too exciting. Actually getting ready to go on a little trip. Just to Chicago, but nothing too exciting. Glad this hurricane's not coming to New Orleans. Sorry for our Florida people, but was kind of worried that it would be coming here when it was just an invest. How are you? How was your week? How was Millie's first concert?
Oh man, Millie's first concert was awesome. And shout out to Amanda in the Facebook group because she was like, I've seen Lawrence, they're awesome. So I was like really pumped to be able to go. So I was just as excited as she was. I bought these tickets like 8 months ago as soon as the tour was announced. But I mean, Millie had a blast. She got to meet Gracie, who's one of the singers. It's basically like her Paul McCartney, like her Beatles or whatever. She came over after talking to her and her face was just like red from smiling so much. Like she was blushing so hard. And we watched the concert. She did great through the whole thing. We were like, we're going to have to leave early because she's going to get tired. And there was probably like three or four songs left. We're like, we should probably go. And she started crying. She's like, I don't want to go. I want to stay and watch the rest of the show. So we got home about 11. I let her sleep in today and then took her to school a little bit late. So it was really good. She just had a blast. She got a $40 t-shirt, which I was pumped about. And it was really cool because we were basically, somehow we ended up in just like this group of other parents, but she was the youngest person there. And there was these other dads that were like, make a bubble around her. Like if anybody comes through, you know what I mean? Cause she's so small. Like if anybody's like, you know, had too much of a drink come through, like we got the bubble, we'll keep her protected. I was just fist bumping so people. Cute. But it was really cool. We had a great time. She loved it. It's one of those things where it's like, I don't know if she'll remember it in, you know, 20 years, but I know me and Kara will, you know, so.
She 100% will. I watched that video and it's her, the band's playing and I guess you're recording and Kara's holding her or vice versa. And she's like, I'm at my first concert.
Yeah.
And I'm like, she's just so happy. And she was dressed so cute. It was cute.
Oh, yeah. She had to put on her Gracie outfit and get ready. And she was definitely feeling herself. She got some new rainbow boots. She was real pumped about it. So It was a great time. And if you ever get the chance to see that band, they're touring right now. Check it out. If you like kind of like pop soul, full horn section. Is crazy. I don't think I told you. So John Oates from Hall & Oates was there and came out and they played Making My Dreams Come True by Hall & Oates. So like seeing...
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Seeing a Hall & Oates song performed live by John Oates was never on my like list things of things that... Yeah. I thought I'd see in my life.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. So I was like, and I told Mila, I was like, I don't think you understand. Like, this is a pretty big deal. That guy's like super famous. So
where's her picture with him?
Yeah. It was pretty cool. But it was a blast. And I am with you. I'm Helene or, you know, whatever the hurricane name is. There's a new one every single week, but it is rolling up. If you're listening in Florida or any of those areas, I know it's supposed to hit here in Nashville, not as bad, but. We're like looking at 40 to 50 miles.
It's pretty head on to you.
Yeah. We're looking at like 50 mile an hour winds and stuff like that. But if you know, you're closer to the Gulf or anything like that, definitely please make sure that you're being safe. Like
get your gas, get your water and get some perishables.
Yeah.
Non-perishables. What is it? Canned goods?
Non-perishables. Perishables go bad. Get a bunch of stuff that goes bad.
Get all your perishables. That's what I did.
Get a bunch of fresh meat and just hope your refrigerator doesn't go out. But just, you know that we're prepare. Thinking about you. Yeah. Prepare
and
for
if
sure.
You're in a flood zone, evacuate.
100%.
Not worth it.
Yeah. But, you know, we do want to let you know that we're thinking about you. We hope you and your families are safe. And, you know, these are just scary sometimes. So,
Yeah.
So, you know, be as safe as you can. And we'll be thinking about you. But,
yeah,
Olivia, absolutely. This one, I mean, we went through a lot last week. I got like double to go through this week. So
yeah, it's like the same length. So This is really like a twofer. This is like a good twofer for our listeners.
Yeah, for sure. And so just a quick recap, if you were listening to this and you haven't listened to the Charlotte Strangler part one, please just stop listening right now. Go back and listen to part one. You can skip through me and Olivia gabbing in the beginning like we always do. Just listen to the case and then come back and listen to it now or else you're going to be completely out of it. But where we left off, you know, we have these women in Charlotte that are being found, they're being sexually assaulted, strangled to death. Police are finally starting to put them together, and we come across a suspect, and that is Henry Lewis Wallace. So what do you say? Should we just jump in, knock out the rest of the case?
Yeah, I'm ready. There's just so many bullet points and more notes to go. So I had so many questions at the end of Monday, really.
Well, let's do it. So Henry Lewis Wallace was born on November 4th, 1965 in Barnwell, South Carolina. His mother, Lottie, was a single parent who worked long hours in a textile mill. Wallace lived with his mother, his older sister, Yvonne, and his great-grandmother. The family had very little money, and their home had no plumbing or electricity. And nothing would go to waste. When Wallace would grow out of his clothes, he was given his sister's hand-me-downs. And Lottie ran a tight ship. She was a strict disciplinarian with very little patience for trouble. And when she was too tired to discipline the children, she would make them go outside and pick switches, watching the children whip each other for bad behavior. But despite his home life, Wallace was a pretty popular kid in school. He was a member of the student council, and he wanted to play football, but his mother wouldn't stand for it, so he became a cheerleader instead. His grades were subpar, but he graduated from Barnwell High School in 1983. After, Wallace attended one semester at South Carolina State College, and it was around this time that he had found a job as a part-time radio DJ, and he much preferred the new gig to college. But it wouldn't last long, as Wallace was fired after he was caught stealing CDs from the radio station.
I know Wallace is probably going to end up being the bad guy, but he's a lot like you and I. He was a cheerleader. He was a radio DJ host.
Yeah. I mean, definitely in a different universe, maybe, but there is a lot of like similarities. It was like, oh, that's pretty interesting.
I'm not trying to make him relatable to us, but it's like, oh, he was a cheerleader. Oh, no, he was a part-time radio DJ.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, because it's like when you get into stuff like this, again, I'm not giving anything away yet or anything like that, but you know, usually if you listen to the show, you know where this is going, right? But it is kind of interesting to kind of look in some of these people who turn out certain ways. You're like, wow, they had, you know, we had things in common, you know, which is kind of crazy when you think about, you know, who like they grow up to happened. Be. Yeah.
What triggered the switch?
Yeah. What was it that, you know, kind of made that light bulb go dim, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Keep going. We got a lot of notes to get through.
You got it. Well, after he was let go, Wallace joined the U.S. Naval Reserve, where he did well. In 1985, he married a classmate from high school, Moretta Bradham. Wallace was now a husband and a stepfather to Moretta's daughter. But the honeymoon wouldn't last long. Shortly after the marriage, Wallace started to dabble with drugs, particularly crack cocaine.
That's what went wrong. There's the switch.
Yeah. But, you know, as we know, drugs aren't free. So Wallace began robbing homes and businesses to fund his new habit. And in January of 1988, he was arrested for breaking into a hardware store. He would plead guilty to second-degree robbery and would be sentenced to 2 years of supervised probation. But Wallace would fail to appear to most of his mandatory meetings. And in February of 1991, Wallace broke into his old high school, specifically the school's radio station. He stole video and recording equipment, but he would be caught trying to pawn them for cash. Now, keep in mind, during all of this, Wallace was still in the Navy Reserve, and in 1992, he was arrested for breaking and entering. Now, due to his near-perfect service record, he would be honorably discharged when his criminal activity became known to the Navy. Shortly after, Moretta decided that she had had enough, and she left Wallace. And by November 1992, he had relocated to Charlotte, where he began finding work at several fast food restaurants.
Bojangles and Taco Bell.
Right. So now we're going to go back to the investigation. And as detectives began to dig into the background of Henry Louis Wallace, connections started to form. Valencia Jumper was good friends with Wallace's sister, Yvonne. Michelle Stinson would often eat at the Taco Bell and become friendly with Wallace. Vanessa Mack was the sister of one of Wallace's ex-girlfriends. Brandy Henderson was the girlfriend of one of Wallace's friends, Vernes Lamar Woods. And as we discussed in part one of the episode, Vernes came home to find both Brandy and his infant son Tyrese strangled. Betty Baucombe was a friend of Wallace's current girlfriend, Sadie McKnight. This was the same Sadie who was roommates with Caroline Love, the first woman to go missing in June of 1992. And as investigators continued digging, they discovered that Wallace had visited Caroline and Sadie's apartment frequently. So detectives now had their first viable suspect, but they had to be careful. They knew that Wallace simply knowing the victims could just be a coincidence. However, it was pretty unlikely. So they decided to approach Sadie McKnight. And at first, she was surprised that they suspected her boyfriend. But as she sat with the information, it seemed to make more and more sense. Wallace was always bringing Sadie gifts, bracelets, rings, necklaces. And as she looked back, she realized that, at times, the jewelry seemed familiar. And it was then that Sadie realized that she could have been wearing the jewelry of dead women. And I just wanted to stop there and kind of get your thought on that, Olivia, because I can only imagine as a woman, right? Like your boyfriend, he's bringing all this stuff. He's like, hey, baby, I got you a ring. Oh, here's a brand new necklace. Here, you know, I was thinking about you. I got this bracelet. And then the cops come. You're like, we're pretty sure he's killing all these women and stealing their jewelry and stuff. And you're like looking down at your wrist. Again, not a woman, but I can imagine I would be like, oh my God. You know what I mean? Like once that flip switch or it all clicks together, like I think I'd be terrified.
Oh yeah. I've just been sitting here over and over, just like nodding in disbelief as you're going through these notes. And I mean, to be like, oh, now that you mention it, like this bracelet looks like my roommate's sister or what, you know, there were so many different connections that I'd have to go back and really remember. But it's just like, it was like one thing was the next, was the next, was the next. And all of these connections, like it had to have been him. So I'm just kind of shocked. Like, and that he got away with this for so long.
Yeah.
But keep going, because we need to know more of like the details and like how they catch him.
Yeah. And I, like I said, I'm with you. You know, I'll definitely keep getting into it. But as I was researching, you know, those movies where they're like, they've got the conspiracy board and it's all the red string going everywhere.
Yeah.
And I was like, this would all be one person.
Yeah.
And it's just all, you know, it's like everything leads back to this guy.
Yeah.
So detectives still needed hard evidence to make a case, and they were about to get it. Betty Baucom's car was finally found. It had been abandoned on the other side of town. And while doing a forensic search of the vehicle, detectives were able to locate swipes of fingerprints on the trunk. Now, luckily, because Wallace had committed all these previous crimes, his fingerprints were on file. And when compared, they were a match. So authorities knew they finally had their man. And luckily, Wallace already had an active warrant for failing to appear in court on those larceny charges. So authorities put a plan into motion. On March 11, 1994, a stakeout of Wallace's apartment began. Detectives held up outside the Glen Hollow apartment complex for 2 days, but unfortunately, there was no sign of their suspect. Luckily, two patrol officers spotted Wallace and were able to track him back to a friend's house. Officers made entry to the home and found him hiding in the bathroom. Henry Lewis Wallace was arrested at 5 p.m. on March 12, 1994. At the time of his apprehension, Wallace was described as sober, calm, and collected, surrendering without any type of incident. He was then transferred to Charlotte's Law Enforcement Center for questioning, but the victory would be short-lived. As detectives waited to question Wallace, another body would be found. Deborah Ann Slaughter was a 35-year-old deli clerk. She was also friends with Sadie McKnight, which meant she was on Wallace's radar. Sadly, her body would be discovered the same day as his arrest. But this time, the scene was much, much more violent. Detectives believed that Deborah had attempted to fight back, and Wallace would proceed to beat and rape her before stabbing her 38 times. He then choked Deborah to death by shoving a white linen towel down her throat. So, back at the law enforcement center, Wallace was being led into an interrogation room, and when he was asked why he thought he was there, he claimed that it must be for the larceny charges. But during an all-night interrogation, detectives would slowly wear him down. And in the early morning hours of March 13, 1994, he began writing down a list of his victims. Now, detectives originally expected 3, maybe 4. Wallace listed 10. Then, in a taped confession, he led investigators through the gruesome details. Wallace described his thoughts as he killed the women, recalling their final words and actions, and describing their agony as he used what he called the Boston choke to strangle them. He shared that he robbed most of his victims before taking their lives, and while the money helped pay for his crack addiction, it was not Wallace's primary motivation. For this serial killer, it was sexual gratification, and he gained that by having power and control over his victims. He told detectives that he had been fired from one job after another, and robbing these women was a quick way to get cash. He also shared the events that led to each murder. In the case of Caroline Love, Wallace had stolen a house key from Sadie McKnight. He snuck inside the home and hid in the bathroom. When Caroline returned, Wallace emerged, telling her that he wanted to make love. And when she refused, he attacked the woman, putting her in a wrestling hold. After the attack, Wallace folded her body into her bedsheet before placing her in a large orange trash bag. He then loaded Caroline's body into his car before returning to the home and grabbing the roll of quarters that she had planned to do laundry with. Then he drove to the city limits and he dumped her body off a secluded road. Wallace returned a week later, telling detectives that the remains had decayed to only bones. In the case of Shauna Hawk, Wallace told detectives that he had no intention of killing her, but he had only stopped by to talk to the young student. Wallace shared that during their chat, Shauna had begun teasing him about a fight that he had been in with Sadie. And this angered Wallace, as his manhood was in question. So it was then he decided to attack Shauna, stealing $50 from her purse before leaving. With Audrey Spain, Wallace had stopped by offering to share a joint, and after they finished smoking, he attacked, demanding to know how much money was inside the apartment. After he killed the woman, Wallace stole her credit and gas card. Then there was Valencia Jumper. Now, I'm not sure if you remember this from the first part of the episode, but Valencia was the woman who her boyfriend showed up at the house. There was smoke coming from the door and they were you know, the pot on the stove, she'd been cooking, the apartment burned down. Yeah. Well, obviously, you know, authorities originally thought that her death was caused by that fire. But in reality, Henry Louis Wallace had paid her a visit that night. On the evening of her death, Wallace had stopped by the apartment saying that he had been in a fight with Sadie. He told Valencia that he just needed someone to talk to. And after chatting for a while, he asked Valencia to call Sadie and just let her know where he was so she wasn't mad at him. As she turned to grab the phone, Wallace attacked. And after taking her life, Wallace went to the kitchen where he found a bottle of rum, 151. He proceeded to pour the alcohol over Valencia's body. Then he put a can of beans in a pan and placed it on the stove. Before he left, he disabled the smoke detector and lit a match, setting Valencia's body on fire. Wallace then calmly walked out of the apartment door, but not before stealing the woman's jewelry in hopes of pawning it. In the case of Michelle Stinson, Wallace had paid her a visit around 11 p.m. on the night of her murder. And if you remember Michelle from the first half of this episode, she was the one who was found by her two children. Now, with Michelle, he told detectives that he had come to the home with the intention of sexually assaulting her. So this was just, I'm showing up, I'm going to get what I want, which is absolutely terrible.
I mean, this just gets worse and worse and worse.
Yeah. And, you know, as we mentioned, right, we're talking about the escalation in part one. As he's going through in the confession, you can, you know, hear in the details that he's sharing, like you can hear through his retelling of what he did that it's like, oh yeah, that's where it's getting worse and getting worse and getting worse, you know? Once in the house and after the pair had been talking, Wallace asked for a glass of water, and when Michelle turned her back, Wallace attacked. After raping the woman with her children in the home, he retrieved the kitchen knife, stabbing her four times. Vanessa Mack was targeted for money. Vanessa had a good job, and Wallace believed that robbing her would be a solid payday. He arrived at the home, pretending to be there for a friendly visit, but when Michelle turned her back, Wallace retrieved a pillowcase from under his coat. And he then proceeded to wrap it around her neck, demanding her ATM card and her PIN number. After she complied, he sexually assaulted Vanessa before strangling her with that same pillowcase. Once she was dead, he exited the home, leaving her child sleeping on the couch. Now, later he would become frustrated when trying to use the ATM card, as it seemed that Vanessa had provided him a fake PIN number. So, again, he was on the hunt. And like Vanessa Mack, the attack on Betty Baucom was based on money. Now, she was a manager at the Bojangles restaurant, and Wallace assumed that she had keys to the safe and knew the alarm codes. On the night of the murder, he arrived at her home asking to use the phone, and Betty obliged. When she turned away, again, Wallace attacked. And in his confession, he told detectives that Betty attempted to fight him back, which angered him. And it was then that he sexually assaulted her. After, he demanded all of Betty's money and he stole her chain. Wallace then proceeded to strangle the victim to death. But not satisfied with the money he had stolen, he decided to rob the apartment. He used Betty's car to transport the stolen goods back to his home. Wallace then abandoned the vehicle, thinking that he had wiped off all of the prints. But when asked, he admitted that he had forgotten to wipe the trunk. Then, after leaving Betty's apartment, he walked down the hall and knocked on Brandy Henderson's door. And I don't think we touched on this in the first part of the episode or in part one. And it didn't really click with me until I was still digging through the research. But Betty and Brandy, he did this in the same apartment building, killed Betty, went down the hall and planned on attacking Brandy as well. So when you talk about
he's a monster.
Yeah. When you talk about escalation, right? You're like,
yeah, that is ballsy. I don't know the other word for it, but that is some courage.
Yeah. 110%. Like, again, it felt very much to me, and I don't mean to give like great white sharks, you know, I'm a big fan of this guy, I know Ewan, he's amazing. He photographs white sharks. He's awesome, right? They're apex predators, but they're really cool. Anyway, I say that to say, like, I don't mean to give him a bad rap, but it reminds me of just like this shark always swimming, you know, looking for something. You know what I mean? That was kind of the vibe that I got. So once he was at Brandy's door, he told her that he had stopped by to leave something for her boyfriend, Vernes. And of course they were friendly, so Brandy invited him in. Once he was through the doorway, Wallace grabbed her, demanding all of her money. But Brandy only had $15 cash and a Pringles can full of change. Wallace led her to the bedroom, where he proceeded to rape her. Now, obviously she was terrified, and after, Wallace told her that he wasn't going to hurt her, and he asked for a hug. Again, scared, Brandy did what she was told, only to be strangled to death with a towel. And it was then that 10-month-old Tyrese began crying. Now, the last thing that Wallace wanted was an angry neighbor calling the cops on a screaming baby. According to his confession, Wallace attempted to calm the child with a bottle and a pacifier. But when that didn't work, he laid the baby in the crib and wrapped a towel around its neck. Wallace told detectives that he didn't want to kill the child, only to restrict enough air to make it hard to breathe. And eventually, the baby's crying began to sputter out. Now, again, you know, if you are listening to this and you haven't listened to part one, or maybe you need a refresher, luckily, you know, baby Tyrese was rushed to the hospital when he was found. He did survive, you know, made a full recovery. He was okay. But after he had committed this atrocious act, Henry Louis Wallace simply left the apartment. Now, in the case of Deborah Ann Slaughter, Wallace approached her asking if she would like to split a bag of cocaine. Which is, you know, super cash. If I had a dollar for every time I asked you that same question, Olivia,
I'd be rich.
Yeah. What are you doing tonight? You want to just
split a bag?
Yeah.
I don't even know what they're called. Split a bag.
Get a little 8-ball. We'll do a 4-4, you know. But the way that he's approaching these people, it's like he knows
so their casual. Weaknesses. They trust him.
Yeah.
And they like trust him. Hey, I just need to use your phone. Hey, I need to do whatever. Hey, can I come over? Hey, I need to give you something to your boyfriend.
Yeah, like I know you like to dabble in you know, the recreational drugs, like you want to split a bag, you know what I mean? Like you know these people well enough to be like, I can say this and it's going to get me the in, right? But in this case, Deborah actually declined. And when she did, he snapped, beating her before strangling her with a towel. Wallace then sexually assaulted her, but Deborah wasn't going down without a fight. She told Wallace that she knew that he was the Charlotte Strangler, the man who had been murdering women in their neighborhood. Now, at some point, Deborah was able to break free and she began screaming for the police. She was also able to reach her purse, and inside was a knife that she had carried for self-defense. But when Deborah attempted to swipe at Wallace, he was able to grab her hand and disarm her. He then used that same knife to stab Deborah repeatedly. Wallace also confessed to killing Shannon Nance, a sex worker, in 1992. He told detectives that at the time he didn't know her name, but that she had been the aggressor. According to Wallace, the pair had had sex, and after she asked for her money, Wallace told her that he didn't have any. It was that point that a scuffle broke out, and Wallace proceeded to beat the woman to death. He stuffed the body in the trunk of his car and drove to an area near some abandoned railroad tracks. There, he dropped the body and left the scene. When the confession was over, detectives asked why Wallace had told them everything that he had done. And according to their killer, if he hadn't have been caught, he wouldn't have stopped. Over the next few weeks, police worked the information obtained during the confession, and thankfully, it would eventually lead to the remains of Caroline Love. So before we move into the trial, the indictments, everything like that, where's your head at? Because I remember doing, I'm doing the research for this, and like, I'm sad and exhausted going through, and like feeling sick going through each one of these. It's just so much.
Yeah, this is why I rated it a 9 after Monday. Like, it's just, I mean, he is a true serial killer. Like, he was like, I wouldn't be stopped. He wasn't getting caught. They didn't have any leads. They weren't figuring it out for a while. And he just kept doing it and just kept doing it and kept doing it. And he got more gruesome and more aggressive as the murders went on. And I'm just here in shock. Like, just, it's disgusting what he's done to these women and people he trusts and the child.
And, it, you know, it's interesting because in the research, you know, one thing I saw is that he would sit and watch the news, you know, because obviously it's being covered on local news and everything like that. So he's sitting, eating his dinner, and he would be stone faced until they said, we have no suspect. And then he would just smile and go back to eating his dinner because he was like, they don't know who I am. They don't know what I'm doing.
Do the next one.
Yeah. And again, I don't know if it's that feeling of like, I'm getting away with this. They're not going to catch me. I can now, you know, I can now attack two people in the same building, right? Like, I, you know, I'm untouchable. He burned
an apartment complex down. Like, what?
Yeah. You know, you just, I don't know, to think that you're just like, I can do whatever I want to and they're not going to catch me. You know what I mean? It's just, it's scary.
This one almost kind of has me lost for words. Like, it's just so much. Like this is a lot. This one's a lot compared to some of them. And I thought some other ones were a lot. This is a lot. Yeah. And maybe just because it's women of like my age, that it's just very unsettling and just imagining being in their shoes. And we can elaborate on this, you know, when we're finished. So, but I'm just in shock and lost for words right now.
Yeah. And to think that this was over like a 2-year period, you know what I mean? Like, as a lot and not a long amount of time.
And like, it's just happening over and over and over and over.
Yeah.
I wouldn't leave my house, I don't think.
No. And I can imagine being the detectives being like, why didn't I look at this sooner? You know what I mean? Why didn't I catch this sooner that all of these people knew this one guy? Because, you know, the sooner you see, you know, you have that information, you see the pattern sooner. You know what I mean? So, you know, I do wonder if there's any like, man, we missed that. And because we missed that, like, you know, we're happy we caught him. We got our guy. But like, could we have gotten him sooner? You know what I mean? Well, on April 4th, 1994, Henry David Wallace would be officially indicted on 9 counts of murder. He would face a handful of additional charges, including various counts of first and second degree rape, various accounts of assault with a deadly weapon, assault on a child under the age of 12, several counts of robbery, and various counts of first and second degree sexual offense. Before the trial started, Wallace filed a petition to have his confession stricken from the record. He claimed that he was coerced into confessing for the murders. However, an independent review would be done, and it found that the interrogation, while long, was completely above board. The trial would last nearly 4 months, with jury selection beginning in September of 1996. Now, the defense attempted to cast doubt on Wallace's sanity. In fact, 2 witnesses were called to try to convince the jury. Colonel Robert K. Ressler from the FBI's Behavior Science Unit and Dr. Ann W. Burgess, a specialist in psychosocial development.
Are they going to talk childhood trauma? Because that's where I think what is happening. I said that twice in my head while we were going through this.
Yeah. And it very well could be. You know what I mean? Like, for me, one thing I was thinking is, if you think about his mother, right, Lottie, very strict, very disciplinarian. Like, if she's not whipping you with you know, a switch, you and your sister are picking them. You're whipping each other, right? Not only did he live with his mother, but he also lived with his sister and his
great grandmother.
Great grandmother, yeah.
I feel like there's trauma and hatred towards women. Anyways, we'll get into all that, I'm sure. So keep going.
Well, and I will say too, in the research, you know, it sounded like Lottie and his great grandmother fought constantly as well. So, you know, when you grow up in an abusive household and it's all these like real headstrong women, you know what I mean? Like, having the right mix of mental illness or psychological issues, like, it would make sense to me that it's like, oh yeah, you just hate women. You know, you may say it's the money, you may say it's the drugs or the power.
He hates women.
Yeah. But it's, you know, you just, you hate women and you destroy them by being this violent thing. And it's crazy.
Overpowering and just having the sense of power. Okay. Keep going.
Well, Colonel Ressler testified that Wallace's crime showed both organized and unorganized behaviors, and he argued that this implied potential mental instability. However, the jury didn't buy it, and on January 7th, 1997, Wallace was found guilty, and he would be sentenced to death on January 29th of that same year. Henry Lewis Wallace currently resides in the death row unit of North Carolina's Central Prison in Raleigh. While family members of the victims are happy with the sentence, it'll never take away their hurt or bring back their loved one. But some, like Shauna Hawk's mother Sylvia, have worked to help other parents who have lost a child to violence by supporting the group Mothers of Murdered Offspring. In an interview with ABC News, Sylvia said, "I just wanted mothers to come together and join our forces and our hearts, not allow the anger and violence to rule our lives. I fight for my own breath sometimes. I fight to be living right now." So, Olivia, that's this week's case, part two. I reckon we have a lot to talk about, so I'm just going to open it up. What are you thinking? I know we've kind of chatted about it as we went through, but as we wrap it up here, where's your head at?
I want to write this man a letter, if I'm being honest. I got a lot of questions, and he really just hates women, you know? And this is devastating. The whole thing is, this is why we as women fear sometimes. Like, I don't say that women live in fear. I don't live in fear. I don't think my friends live in fear. But like, there's always a sense of like paying attention, you know, just paying attention to what's happening around you. And like, if we walked across the world and just oblivious to everything, like, there are monsters out there that are just wanting to overpower somebody and take advantage of and just be this controller. And it's just terrifying. I mean, the whole thing's terrifying. And like I said, I made it a 9 in the beginning because I knew where it would go. And I didn't have any inkling that it would be as bad as it was, you know? And I just feel for all these families and just, you know, even thinking about Sadie. Sadie was kind of like a big common denominator in a lot of these. And just think of like some guilt she may have.
Yeah.
And you know, it's a small community, a small group of people, obviously. And I don't know. It's a lot. It was a lot. Yeah. I'm glad he got caught. I really am glad. I'm glad he forgot to wipe the trunk.
You want to know something that's going to infuriate you?
I don't know.
He's married now.
What? To who?
There's a nurse.
Nurse? Oh, my.
Yeah.
We're not. I'm writing him a letter.
I forgot to jot down her name in the you know, probably, you know, rightfully so. Like, she didn't commit any crimes. I'm not trying to blast her name out anywhere. But from what I read, it sounded like a kind of pen pal type of situation, you know. And I don't know if he's still saying like he's innocent. I didn't do it, whatever. But
he,
you know,
confessed.
But you see a lot of that too. You see people that, you know,
to not one,
they're in prison and they're like, hey, yeah. Like, you know, I met this guy and we hit it off. We were just writing letters back and forth. And, you know, the other really interesting thing is like when he was arrested, he was like 180 pounds and he is now like pushing like 400 pounds. So I don't know if it is to me, what that signals, because, you know, not that like your weight has anything to do with it, but what it signaled to me was maybe some kind of, again, mental illness, imbalance, you know what I'm saying? Where, you know, you get on the right meds and like, oh, now you actually are like eating and like, you know what I mean? Like you're, I had a friend growing up who he got into a lot of trouble and they sent him to one of those like terrible desert work camps for kids. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And when he went,
just like, come pick your friend up and take him.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. They like pick you up in the middle of the night. And
yeah.
So when he went, you know, he was probably 100 pounds, you know what I mean? Real short. And when he came home, he had actually been eating like the way that you're supposed to eat. And I mean, like he had shot up, he had grown like a foot. He would, you know what I mean? Put about like, so I guess my point is just like, I don't know if it was like a, like some kind of mental illness where it's like he's on meds or something like that. And maybe now he's eating, you know, probably not healthily, right? If you're, I don't know. All I'm saying is like there's something mentally going on with that, right? Where it's like,
whether it's medicine or the mental illness or being treated for mental illness or, you know.
Yeah.
He definitely looks different. I had to Google him and he definitely looks different.
Yeah, because everybody's like,
I can't believe I've never heard about the Taco Bell Strangler as much as I know. Love Taco Bell.
I know.
And like, this is his name.
I know. And I don't think, you know, I think technically they coined him the Charlotte Strangler. And then somewhere down the line, it got turned into Taco Bell. Taco I think Bell we, Strangler. There's no way Taco Bell is going to sponsor us now. I think we threw that out the window. But, you know, it's just, it's when I saw that he was married, I just absolutely could not believe it because, you know, again, not a woman, but I'm like, how could you see that he's confessed, right, to all these terrible things? And you're like, yeah, but I love him though. You know what I mean? Like,
how he hates women.
Yeah. And that's the other thing too. Like you have a friend group, right? You have like people that you hang out with, probably guys and girls. And like Kara and I, we have friends that are guys, girls, stuff like that. And like the idea that one of them is just like, yeah, I have buddies that like, if they had stopped here and we're like, hey, what's up? Like, what's going on? Just, I was in the neighborhood. What are you doing? Like, you want to hang out for a minute? We'd open the door and let them in. No problem. I just think it's, you know, it's crazy because, you know, you, like I said, we've talked about it before, when is like your spouse or something that you'd like to think that you know somebody, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? And it's the minute that you, you know, by the time you realize they're not who they present themselves as, you know, in a situation like this, it's too late, you know? Yep. So I'm with you. I can't believe I never heard about this before either. And as I dug into it, I was just like, this dude, it feels like he should be as prolific as like, as you know, Night Stalker.
Any of the others. Yeah, yeah. Like, and I'm looking at, like, I Googled him. And so I like scrolled through some articles and stuff. And it was on 2020 and 2022. Like, how did I miss that? I watch 2020 all the time. Dateline, all of it.
Yeah. And so, I thought this would be a good one to bring to you, bring to the listeners. Because again, you know, the whole reason that's we started doing this. It. Yeah. The whole reason we started doing this podcast is because we're like, yeah, we watch this stuff when we're not. You know, when we're home, this is how we relax. So you were pretty well versed on a lot of these cases. And like I said, this one just kind of blew my mind that I didn't know, you know, how terrible this guy is. And again, like thinking about my wife or, you know, Millie growing up and having friends at you know, a certain age, it's just like, man, sometimes it feels like you can do everything you think of to like keep yourself safe. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the snake always finds its way into the chicken house. You know what I mean? Like,
I'm just telling you, I thought the other night I was walking and a car passed me 3 times.
No, you didn't tell me that.
Well, I was FaceTiming my mother, so I was safe-ish. but yeah, it was the night of the full moon. I took the dog on a late night walk because the moon is in the front of my house, so I can't like sit on my back porch and watch it. And so I was like, well, I'll just go on a little walk. You know, the sun, moon's coming up. It's beautiful. Anyways, the same car. I can tell you, it was a silver RAV4 and it passed me 3 times on different ways. We went on our normal big loop and it passed me 3 times in 3 different ways. And I finally told my mom, I said, write this license plate number down because this car has passed me 3 times in very odd directions. And then eventually I was able to like go home and they had turned another way. And so like they couldn't see where I was, you know, going or, you know, but I was like, they could have just been driving around. Like, it could have been a teenager learning how to drive in the neighborhood. It could have been anything. It was dark. I couldn't see in the car.
Teenager, like, driving around smoking a joint, just being like, the full moon, man. I don't know,
but like, I'm a single girl who's walking her dog at night, who does a true crime podcast. You're after me.
Yeah.
And that's my point of, like, always paying attention, even when I'm just like in my neighborhood, you know?
Can I tell you why you're like, you're one of my favorite people in the world?
Why?
Because you're the person that's like, I had to take my dog on a walk to see the full moon. It was beautiful. Where I'm like, oh, cool, moon's full. And then I'm like, I'm going inside.
It was also a partial lunar eclipse. And it was like three moons. It was like a blood moon. I don't remember. I put out my moon water, recharged my crystals. You know, I'm a little witchy, but it's fine.
Well,
I'm single. Walking the dog at night alone.
No, listen, someday you're going to find the perfect wizard for you. He's going to have the long sleeves. He's going to be pretty. Like, I'll recharge your crystals.
As long as he can apparate and I can just click my fingers and be where I need to be, I'm fine with that.
Well,
anyway,
yeah, it's crazy, man. Like, I'm the same way. I'll see a car like going up and down my street. And I'm like, what are you doing?
Who are you?
Like, you just drove by a couple minutes ago. Even if you were dropping somebody off, there's no reason for you to drop them off, leave, and then come back.
There's no reason for a third time. That's what triggers you, is the third time. Like, okay, I saw you once. Okay, you might have went the wrong way. I saw you twice. Okay, now I saw you a third time in a different spot. Absolutely not. You're kidnapping me. I think they realized, like, I was looking at them like, hey, and I had my phone out and I was FaceTiming. So, like, it was bright. So, you know, I could have been calling anybody. Who knows? That's what my little mind went to, but they left. I was able to make it home, but I was like, we're not walking at night for a while.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. I think it's like, this is also one of those ones too, where I just wonder, like, if he was doing this today, I don't think there's any way he would have got that many victims.
No.
You know, there's cameras everywhere. I definitely think that part of this too is just because of when it took place and, you know, the time of it and everything, but you know, it's still scary, man. It's just, it's a whole lot of victims. It's a whole lot of people with a lot of bright futures. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of families shattered. Yeah, you know, it's bad all the way around. But now that we've gone through the whole thing, final deadbolt test, with us talking about it, I think I know where you're gonna fall on it. But what are you thinking? Where are you putting this episode? Where do you rate the Charlotte Strangler?
15 out of 10.
Yeah, man. I mean, I'm going to give it
a 15. I'm going to give it a 10 out of 10, but 15, really?
I'll give you 20. A 15. I'll give you 15 for sure. Yeah. I'm going to put it at 10 because, like I said, what was crazy is today, as I was finishing up, you know, putting the finishing touches on everything, we had the concert last night. Kara was tired. There was still stuff to get done around the house, right? So I was in here typing and Millie was, you know, at the desk next to me. She's coloring. And I'm like, reading through this like horrific stuff and typing up my notes, and I'm just looking over at her and she's like, dad, why are there bullies, you know, like asking me these questions. And like, I choked up for a second and I was just like, if anything ever happens to you, dude, you know what I mean? Like, and I think the same thing, you know, when I look at my wife or like when I look at you, I'm just like, if any, like,
lose your marbles.
Yeah. You know what I mean? It's just, there's just so many evil, evil people out there, and
people,
you know,
in the world. Yeah.
You just got to be as diligent as you can, but
just
for
be
me,
kind, be kind, be kind, yeah. Just be kind.
But for me, this is a 10 for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I said it 15.
And I'll give it to you. I'll let you break, okay, the scale, thanks, on this one.
I mean, this was 11 women of my age.
Yeah.
Just getting brutally attacked and murdered.
Well, yeah,
worse,
and I mean,
and worse and worse.
You're looking at victims starting as young as 10 months old.
Yeah.
All the way up to 30, like 35. You know what I mean? Like, and again, just the escalation. You know what I mean? It's just, it's
scary.
Oh,
and it was obvious.
Yeah.
It was so obvious in the first episode. Like, oh, yeah, he's getting worse. He's escalating. He doesn't care. He's not even thinking about getting caught.
Yeah. When I was doing the research too, I was like, how does the FBI miss this? Right. But then as I like went through and started thinking about the demographics, like serial killers, usually middle-aged white men, you know what I mean? Like he did not fit any
Baton Rouge serial killer.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like the Baton Rouge serial just didn't fit
family, kids.
Yeah. Didn't fit the criteria for it. And it was just like easy to kind of write it off. No, that's not what's going on. But you know, again, I think that kind of falls into like, if you were one of the agents working that case back then, like, how do you feel about it now? You know what I mean? So, well, that is where we fall on the deadbolt test for this week's episode. Olivia's coming in. She's putting in a 15 out of 10. I'm dropping a 10 out of 10. But as always, we got to go over to the listeners, our locksmiths. Where does the Charlotte Strangler, we usually say the victim's names, but there's just so many of them. So where does the case of the Charlotte Strangler fall on your deadbolt test? You can let us know. Reach out to us on Instagram at Check the Locks Pod. You can find us on Twitter at Check the Locks. If you're not in our Facebook group, what are you doing? Come hang out with us. We'd love to get some time, get to know you, hang out with you a little bit. We just had somebody join the Facebook group all the way from Australia. Because, you know, when you sign up, you got to put a little information in. She was like, I'm an avid listener. I'm listening in Australia. Like, keep up the good work. So thank you so much for listening all the way across the ocean and joining the Facebook and coming to hang out with us. We're super excited to get to know you. And if you want to join the Facebook, so cool. But if you want to come join the Facebook group, there is a link in the description of the episode that you're listening to right now. So click it, join it. We'd love to have you. And as always, we want to hear from you, right? What do you think about the show? What do you like? What do you dislike? Did we miss something? Something we should have covered? So we would love to hear from you. Olivia, if somebody wants to leave a 5-star review, how do they do that?
They need to go to the Apple Podcast app, go to our show's homepage, scroll all the way down where you see all 5 stars, click all 5 stars, light them up, whatever color they are on your phone or computer, and leave us a little bit of love and tell us what you think.
That's right. And Olivia says it best, so I don't have to. That's Apple Podcasts. Click those stars. Leave that review. Those reviews, they help us out so much. Number one, we get to hear from you and what you think about the show. But number two, it helps us get into other shows' recommendations so new people can find the show. So if you've taken the time to leave us a review, just know we appreciate that so much. If not, Apple Podcasts, leave that review. You can also leave us some Spotify comments as well. The cool thing about Spotify comments is we can actually respond back to them and have a little cool chit chat there as well. So if you listen on Spotify, feel free to leave that comment. We'd love to hear from you there. You can also send us an email that is contact@checkthelockspod.com. And if you want to leave us a voicemail, we would love to hear from you. Give us a call. You can dial our Check the Locks voicemail line at 615-920-9393. Again, that is 615-920-9393. Give us a call, leave us a voicemail. We would love to play it on the show and hear what you think. And if you like what we do, you want to help financially support the show, you can do so by becoming a patron. Head over to patreon.com/checkthelocks, get signed up today. We got a lot of great tiers, a lot of exclusive benefits, stickers, coffee mugs, all sorts of stuff you only get for being a patron. Plus, you get the episodes commercial free. So if you love Check the Locks, but you hate those ads, Patreon is the way to go. So again, you want to help us out, keep the lights on, throw us a few bones. That's patreon.com/checkthelocks, get signed up today. And if you can't financially support the show, we definitely understand. Just listening, hanging out with us every week, sharing what we do with your friends, your family, the people who are important to you means just as much, if not more. So if you're listening, you're telling people to check it out, send them links to the show, just know that we appreciate it so much. Again, it's all about growing, right? And by you sharing the show, that's going to get us in front of new listeners. It's going to help grow our community, and it's completely organic and grassroots. So if you are sharing what we do, just know that we appreciate you more than we could ever, ever tell you. That is all that we have for this week's case, but please make sure that you are subscribed to Check the Locks in your favorite podcast app so that you never miss an episode. We will see you again next week with another truly terrifying true crime case, but until then, don't forget to
check the locks.
See you next week.
And don't let strangers in.
Yeah. Choose your friends wisely.